Welcome to the Cordwainers In Their Shoes podcast.
My name is Katie Greenier and I'm the Creative Talent and Network Director at Pentland Brands. Cordwainers are shoemakers and today the worshipful company of Cordwainers works to promote footwear design and entrepreneurship in both education and the fashion industry. To celebrate the company's 750th anniversary, we have recorded this series to explore what it is like to live in the shoes of those who make them. Today I'm joined by Michael Atmore, who's Editorial Director of Footwear News and Chief Brand Officer for Fairchild Fashion and Media. They offer extensive coverage of footwear industry trends for fashion designers, business executives and retailers, as well as reports and reviews of major runway shows. Hi, Michael. It's lovely to see you. I'm in London. Michael, tell us where you are.
I'm sitting in our PMC studios and I'm looking out at the New York Public Library. So I'm in the heart of New York.
Michael looks ever so handsome. He's got a cream jacket and a very fresh white shirt on and he's looked incredibly handsome. So I don't look as good as Michael and we're both on a Zoom call. So it's so lovely to see him because it's been quite a long time since I last saw you, especially in the flesh. I think maybe even 4 years.
Yeah, too long.
So, Michael, tell us, where are you from?
I was born in northern Minnesota in a town called Duluth, up on the north shore of Lake Superior, and moved to Minneapolis, where half my family was, and went to school there, and had stepbrothers and sisters that went to school in New York City, so I sort of grew up in New York City as well. And as soon as I could, I moved to New York City. So I'm a New Yorker now.
So what did your family do, your mom and dad?
My father was an orthopedic surgeon, so he was gone a lot. He was in the operating room much of my life. He passed away when I was 17 years old, so he
really
died
young.
Very prematurely. And then my mother remarried a family friend, and my best friend became my stepbrother. So it was an interesting upbringing. So I have six stepbrothers and sisters in addition to five brothers and sisters. My oldest brother, Mark, died shortly after my father.
Very, very sad. That was incredibly, I'm sure it was. What was it like growing up in Duluth? Am I saying it right?
You're saying it exactly right. So it's interesting because about 7 years ago, I went back and bought a vacation house that my parents had built, but my father hadn't lived in for very long. And so I am back there now with my husband, Paul, and it's an interesting experience to be back. My mother is no longer with us, but she was alive during the beginning of that phase, and it was a pretty emotional thing to come back into a house that she had built, and then we bought, and she was able to come kind of full circle, come back to that house. So I'm up there quite a bit. It's a beautiful part of the world. It's, again, on the shore of Lake Superior, so it's super, very, very clean, lots of nature. You're really out in the woods, so it's a great life.
I hear that you have a joy of sailing and skiing.
Yes.
Does that come from living near the massive lake?
It did. My father learned how to sail just by buying boats and taking his young son named Michael out on them and trying to learn as we went.
And were you good?
In the storms of Lake Superior, it was a little terrifying at moments. I'm a bit different sailor than my father was. My father was sort of head out. Like I said, he worked all the time, so it was just really hard to for him to gauge weather and pick his spots. So he just went no matter what. I don't do that because we were in some pretty scary situations. So I'm more of a fair weather sailor, but I sail all the time and I have a boat and I live on the boat on the weekends in the summer. Yeah.
So tell me, where did you go to college and what did you study?
I went to the University of Minnesota and I studied, ironically, psychology was really something I was fascinated by. So as a psych major, but I was in writing programs from really high school all the way through college and loved to write and started working as a writer pretty early on during college and right after college with freelance gigs, and then I had a friend in New York City who ran a big publishing company, and they put me through sort of a career testing funny course that I don't think exists anymore, where it's sort of like, who should you be? And it turned out that, yes, I should be a writer. So they put me in an editorial training program, something that doesn't exist either anymore. And I moved around in that company to about 30 different magazines. Each month, they put you on a different magazine. You had to learn a different industry and produce copy, you know, write stories based on, with industry knowledge based on basically, you know, just days worth of research. So it was great training. I really loved it. You learned a lot about business. You learned a lot about teamwork because each magazine had a different style and different team. And you learned a lot about writing because you're obviously edited by 30 different editors. And I came out of that knowing quite a bit. And then went to work for a couple other publishing companies and just really loved the world of magazines. Just thought that was fascinating.
It sounds like your training was a real sort of, I suppose, just such a great grounding.
It was.
Because you had to work on so many different titles, have so many different styles and write about so many different things. And probably, you know, it seems a bit sad that that doesn't exist anymore because it probably is quite groundbreaking for a career.
Yeah. It was amazingly helpful in many, many ways. And like I said, the most important lesson was really how different teams operated and different styles of management, you know, and I think I wouldn't have been as thoughtful about that at that age had I not gone through that.
I've also read that you did a spate of modeling and acting. Is this true?
Oh, my God. Now, where did you read that?
I literally have been looking at loads of sources.
So, yeah, when I was young, I was a skier, as you mentioned, and my family was very active in skiing, both professionally and just as sport. My father was an Olympic team doctor, and so we were always very aware of, and we knew a lot of Olympians, both in the Olympian caliber athletes and those trying to become them. And up in northern Minnesota, you have a lot of skiing, you have a lot of ski jumping, you have a lot of ice skating, a lot of those sports, those athletes are really excellent from up there. So we were very involved in that community. And as a family, we were ski family of the year, I think, once. And I just love skiing. My father loved skiing. I raced a bit. I wasn't as good as my older brothers. They were very, very good ski racers. But I was a good skier, and I started teaching when I was very young. I started teaching skiing when I was about 15 years old. And that kind of grew into a career in selling skis and just getting into the world a lot. And then I did some ads, and then I worked for a department store, Family Friends, that later became Target. It was called Dayton Hudson.
Wow.
The Dayton family was just really good friends of my parents. So I modeled for them for a while, and I just hated modeling so much. And then I became sort of an actor based on the commercials and did a little bit of acting work. And then I came to New York. And then when I was trying to be a writer, I was also trying to be an actor. So I worked actually quite a bit for a while, for a few years, did some soaps and sitcoms and things, but it ultimately just wasn't a career that I felt was comfortable in terms of security and just knowing what you were going to do tomorrow. So I tried to do both for a long time, and finally my writing career was too big to accommodate, you know, time off to do the other. So it's kind of interesting now in this part of my career, though, because you're on camera a lot and you're doing things live a lot. So in a way, all that training comes back.
Such good experience, really, isn't it?
And I say, you know, I went to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts, which is just down Madison. And I have to say that was just excellent training, not for acting, just for life. Really teaches you who you are and sort of how you come across to others. So all good.
It seems a bit that without knowing, you've been given a lot of tools, a lot of ingredients to get to the place you are now. And even though you've gone on different routes, it really feels like all of these things, all of these little different careers, these little gems, the everything from the skiing and the boating has actually perhaps led you to where you are now. So talking about where you are now, how did you start at Footwear News, the industry's Bible for the shoe business?
So after the publishing experience that I talked to you about, I had a couple other jobs, and I work for a company that grew very quickly. Actually, International Thompson, which is a big travel company, UK-based, you would know that name. And they had a magazine publishing arm here in America, and they had a lot of titles. And I just quickly, in my 20s, became an editorial director there and had about three magazines under my belt. I don't know how this happened, in three different industries, and was consulting on others. It was just a crazy time. And but they folded their U.S. operation. So unfortunately, that ended. And it was the first time that I was sort of out on the street again, trying to figure it out. And I quickly realized that there were a lot of other opportunities in media at that time. And so I took a freelance, what I thought was a freelance gig, to start a new magazine in the footwear space. And the idea was that it was going to marry the world of sport, which was really, you know, the rise of all the athletic companies. It was going to cover sort of the head-to-toe nature of what the athletic companies were offering. And then we were also going to touch on the world of fashion. So we produced a very glossy, very edgy magazine that quickly got the attention of Fairchild, because Fairchild was already in that business in a very profound way. So they noticed me and kind of came after me a couple times. The first time was for something called the Internet Director, which I wasn't really keen on at that point because I didn't really understand what that would be. And then the second was to just take over Footwear News. And Footwear News at that point, you know, was a very established but somewhat a dry magazine. And I think they were hoping that I would infuse a little bit of what they had seen on the other. And it was a time when we were starting the beginnings of a digital life. And then Fairchild was bought and sold a couple times. It was owned by Disney. It was owned by Condé Nast. And most recently, 6-7 years ago, bought by Penske Media Corporation. So I always say it was like having a new job each time it was bought, because obviously different directives, different culture, and really different sized companies each time.
It seems that you can mix design flair, writing success, and commercial leadership. What do you think the ingredients are that make you successful in these roles? And what do you enjoy most?
What I always say about the footwear industry, and particularly being in the spot that I'm in, is that I think a lot of people, both within the industry and outside, underestimate how many worlds we touch. Certainly at the magazine, we're covering everything from global sourcing and government regulations, labor issues, to retail, Wall Street, mergers and acquisitions, to the product itself, from the smallest designer to the biggest brand. And there's just so many worlds that connect there. There's the world of sport, there's the world of entertainment, there's the world of fashion, there's the world of business. And it's such a global business that there's just an endless amount of opportunities to really connect different worlds. And I find that endlessly fascinating. I don't think there are enough pages or words online or hours in the day to really connect all of what there is to connect in the world. So I find it a very fascinating career. And I think now that we're so digital, Penske is really the leading digital player now in the media landscape. And so they've added a lot of expertise to what, you know, was historically sort of a, as you said, the Bible of the industry. They've given us a huge reach now. There are months that the content at Footwear News reaches close to 11 million people. So we're now really, truly a global voice, which is, it's also really powerful.
So what does a normal day in your life look like?
There is not a normal day. you know, we're coming back a little bit to live events. Tomorrow we have our last virtual summit. Hopefully we'll pivot to live events again. So I think in the next week, we have a market in New York, followed by Las Vegas and the outdoor market in Denver. And these will be our first forays back into the live world to really see the industry coming together, at least the people who are willing to come together. So I think this is a big time of transition now that we're going to see if the world can come back live and what that feels like and looks like. So the normal day that was probably a week ago will be different in a week, and that's pretty much the way it's been for a while.
Do you have any small things that you have to do before you start work or when you finish work? Any small habits or routines that you know that just make for a successful day?
Starbucks coffee.
That's it.
Pretty much.
Love it. Very simple.
Triple venti skim latte. Only one. My doctor says only one, but...
If it's hard, do you push it out to two?
And I used to, and I told him, I said, you know, I'm having trouble sleeping. And then he asked me how much coffee I'm consuming, and he looked at me in horror. So it's one.
What I think about you is that you have the ability to mix in every social circle. Do you find this difficult, or does it come naturally to you?
You know, I think the interesting thing about a job like this is that you really understand, because we host so many events, you really understand everybody has sort of the same insecurities and, you know, feelings. So once you understand that, I don't think much makes me that nervous. And I also think in this job that you have to do things alone a lot. You know, it's not like other people can do your work for you. So I think it's just something I've gotten used to, and I really love meeting people. Like I said, coming back into the live world is something that's going to be really profound for me, because it's been hard to be just Zooming and, you know, doing everything virtual. So yeah, I have a big appreciation for moving around the world and moving between different groups of people. And I'm just a very curious person, so I think that helps.
When was the last time you did feel nervous?
You know, odd things make me nervous. Sometimes if my schedule is too tight and I feel like I can't really give everyone the proper time, that's actually what, it's not so much nervous, it just can make me a little anxious. You know, we have a team and I'd like to spend more time with them, and sometimes my schedule is so intense that you really don't get the time to spend just one-on-one. My husband travels a lot, so that's, you know, that can make me a little anxious sometimes, because we have to really plan our lives, and it's just been so impossible during COVID to really make plans that stick. So sometimes that can upset things.
You are known to be the talent finder, the mentor, the feeder of the footwear industry. Where do you seek out your talent?
Well, thank you for that. I really do believe that we have committed ourselves to young talent and supporting young talent. So I think in a way, the talent now finds us, because we're known for that. So people are very, very helpful at bringing forth who they think is great. But that's probably been the most rewarding side of my job, is that, you know, we can say, not that we discovered people, but we gave them a huge boost at the beginning of their careers. And, you know, I think it's just networking. People will find people, and it's being out in the world. And that's why I say I miss, because walking those trade shows or at those events or just being out in the world networking, you really do find talent. It will come to you.
You really have helped nurture and nourish so many young careers. What advice would you give to someone that is starting out?
I really think one of the biggest things that happens, if we're just talking design talent now, is that they often don't have a business voice or a business partner that can help shape the business, the actual business. I think a lot of creatives fail because they haven't scaled their business properly, or they can't. And that's both, you know, living through the lean years and figuring out, you know, what you need to make it. It's also a problem for those that kind of explode, if you will, because, you know, they have to scale up quickly, and sometimes they get involved in big accounts that they can't really service properly, or they can't deliver the goods. And, you know, all of this builds a reputation, and I think sometimes it can be challenging always. So I always say that the best brands are the ones where it's a marriage between creative and business. And I would just tell every young creative to not
ignore the business side and have a voice or a partner or someone that they really rely on from the get-go. Super important. Super important.
Totally agree. So I'm a trustee of a charity called the National Saturday Club. And one of the things that I find, it's for 12 to 16 year olds, and they go to universities, open their doors every Saturday, and they just are creative. And one of the things that I found is that they don't ever consider a job within footwear. It's not even on their radar. Do you feel there is a sense of elitism in the footwear industry? And is there a way you feel we could do more to break down those barriers?
I don't know if I'd call it elitism. I think that probably the footwear industry hasn't been, for lack of a better word, publicized as a career choice properly. We do a lot of work with fashion schools here in New York City. You know, and we did a program with FIT for years. And I think that what I noticed most was there's a lot of apparel-based sort of job glamorization through television, movies, you know, reality TV. And I think sometimes the footwear industry hasn't really shown the world that that's a career path and that's a career path worth taking. So I think that's more of the issue. I also think that our big design masters, if you're going to look at a Manolo Blahnik or Christian or, you know, any of the big names in the industry, there aren't as many as there are in apparel. So I think sometimes just the sheer volume of design talent that's known is not necessarily, it doesn't help the cause because there just aren't as many people out there that people can read about and learn about. And that's also one of my missions, is to always pay attention to the masters of our industry and make sure that we are constantly providing a window into their personal and business lives, because I think it's super important. They set an example that other people follow. And I think that people are interested in what their careers really have turned out to be.
I totally agree. And it's always lovely to see how someone else has made it and how they've grown. What's been the most challenging project for you?
You know, we do a power list that I think is somewhat intimidating because it's subjective. There's science behind it, but it's also, there's a subjective piece. And I think it's a powerful franchise for us, but it's also, it's tough to rank people in any form.
I was going to ask what a power list is. So it's like a ranking of the most powerful in the footwear trade, or how does it work?
Yes. For the most part, it's retail footwear, but it's a little bit broader. There's some people that, you know, are straddling the worlds of apparel or accessories in general. But in short, I think that can be challenging. You know, we went through a lot in the past year. I think the past year has been very challenging on quite a few fronts. We've had a really fascinating, eye-opening window into a lot of issues that were bubbling underneath the surface in America. And I think having a front row seat with those big athletic companies, they were really dealing with racial issues both within the companies and with their customer base. And we broke a lot of stories last summer that had to do with company culture, equality, and inclusion. It was fascinating to do that. But those are intimidating pieces to work on, because you're actually changing, you know, your editorial will change or has the possibility to change the culture of a company. So that can be a bit daunting. And I think COVID itself just had moments where everyone thought the world was collapsing. And certainly if I look back a year ago at the things we were doing, and we were very public, you know, there were people who were terrified. And I felt our job was to present leadership that we chose to present that was more calming and more long range. And there are luckily some great leaders in the footwear industry that provided that perspective that we will get through this. And, you know, everyone remained calm, basically, which was really helpful. But that was a scary time, you know, a year ago spring.
I think you have a really powerful position by the articles and the content that you write. And I think it's sometimes really hard to make sure that you get the right judgment on stuff and take the right line. I think that's what you were trying to say.
Yeah, and I think there's always so much more to say. So, like I said to you earlier, I think it's just there's always more stories to write. There's always other perspectives to bring forward. And, you know, that's probably another challenge, if you will, is just have we done enough? Have we covered everything?
So who and what inspires you?
You know, there are a lot of people I've met along the way that I think have taught me a lot about leadership, and I really value them. There's probably too many to mention, but I've really been lucky to be able to not only know people on a professional basis, but actually be friends with them and merge a little bit of business and friendship. And so I've had some people that have been wise counsel over the years, and all ranges of ages and all places. And I really value that. So it's been enormously helpful.
Everyone needs those people that you trust, admire, and respect to go to, especially when I think within your position as well, you know, just to sort of get a different view, a different sort of sense of what else is real.
Yeah, and I think just to learn how to carry yourself through the world, you know, I didn't really get to watch my father that much. I certainly watched my mother, but I've gravitated to people who are really examples of how to stay strong in the face of a lot of life's challenges. And so, you know, my husband worked for Her Majesty the Queen for many, many years, and lucky enough to be able to have been in that world a bit and just be so influenced by her and all the amazing things that have happened there. I have some great friends here in America that are older than myself who offer me a lot of wisdom when I need it. And then I think just a great young team around you. You know, we talked about this a little earlier, so that you always remember what's happening.
And know how to work it.
Yeah. And when you don't, you can ask a question quickly.
If you would like us to know 3 things about you, what would they be?
I think that I really love the diversity of talent in this industry, probably more than I show. I love the scope and range of the industry. I think on a personal level, I have a great curiosity about the world. And I think that has helped, like I said earlier, sort of move me in directions that I probably wouldn't have gone in had I not been so curious. And I think the third thing is I really love, for all my business and urban life, I really love nature. I really like to be in nature. So I have kind of a dual personality in the sense that I'm sitting in New York City right now, but I would be just as happy up on Lake Superior in the woods. So
I think that's really healthy though.
It's worked. It's worked for me.
We'll allow you that. It's really healthy to do that, because I don't think if you're all one thing, I don't think it always works out because you don't have the respect for the other things around you. What would you be if you weren't chief brand officer?
When I was a kid, I really wanted to be a naval architect, and that means a boat designer. And I used to do this for hours on end. And actually, my father's boats were Morgan's, and it was a company run by Charlie Morgan. And one of the biggest thrills of my life has been that I'm now friends with 89-year-old or 90-year-old Charlie Morgan in Florida. So as a young boy, it was just an absolute dream to even get close to this guy. He was a famous naval architect. He raced in the America's Cup. And I read once in Yachting Magazine that a kid had, during America's Cup campaign, a kid had mailed him $1 to support the campaign, and that he invited this kid to come sailing. And so I mailed $2 to him immediately, and he never wrote me back. So I was just crushed. I would wait by the mailbox every day, like, will he write back? But funny enough, when I, you know, maybe 10 years ago, we were put in touch by a mutual friend, and he's just a dear, dear friend now. And he actually designed the boat that I have currently, named Francesca. That's a vintage boat built in the 60s. So he's absolutely thrilled and looks at my life all the time because I'm on one of his creations. So that was fun.
So it's gone full circle, really. And do you think that he really did get the dollar from the other kid anyway, or do you think that's just a load of old rubbish?
It made a great story. I mean, they had a picture of the kids sailing. I was so jealous. So jealous.
What have you done that you're most proud of?
I think we talked about it. I think the biggest accomplishment in my career is really helping young talent become more established in this industry. And I think there are a number of talents now that I can definitely say I helped. And I don't know, that feels pretty good.
Yeah, I totally agree. Right, I'm now going to do the fun bit, which is the quick fire questions, which means you have to be quick. If you could talk to the Prime Minister stroke President, what would you say?
I have a lot to say to either one about their communication styles and some of the messaging. I feel like sometimes leaders aren't aware of how they're coming across and also just how often things need to be repeated in this culture. This is a very fractured world in terms of how we consume media and how we see and hear things. So I think leaders need to be careful about messaging. And I think they're still very traditional about their messaging.
So you'd give them some guidance on that?
I think I would have a lot to say, yes.
Last thing you worked on?
We just did a big shoot with Paris, Nikki, and Kathy Hilton out in Los Angeles. And that's what we're working on upstairs. We're on a really tight deadline, and that'll be out Monday.
That sounds good. I want to see that. What fashion trend do you just not get?
There are a few right now. I think there's a very utilitarian look that I understand its popularity. I don't always think it's the most flattering. The thing I think about fashion trends is I think they're great, and they're great for the business, so don't get me wrong. I just don't think everybody can adopt a trend. I think you have to always be an individual and stay true to yourself, and just because it's a trend doesn't mean it's for you.
So, nice answer.
Yeah.
Diplomatic, yeah. Too. Are you a morning or night person?
Very much a night person. Find it very hard to go to bed. I like the idea of the silence of night and the time to think at night, because that's when the world is not at your door. My mother was a night owl. My grandmother was a night owl. I have a history of people sort of being night owls. But recently during COVID, I've started waking up very early. So I now understand the power of morning, and I didn't before. I have a house, as I told you, on Lake Superior. And in the morning, the sun rises over the lake and fills that house with light. And we're talking at 4:30, 4:45 a.m. So I often get up just to watch that whole sunrise because it's just spectacular. So I've learned the value of the beauty of mornings, but it's still a struggle.
That's why you need the coffee.
That's the Starbucks. That's exactly right.
If you're stranded on a tropical island, what two things would you take with you?
I'm a big reader, so I would just have to make sure that there was something to read, whether that's an electronic, device or a bunch of books. And then I think just sun protection, maybe. I'm a very fair-skinned person, and I like to live in the sun.
You have got the most incredible complexion. I'm just going to put it out there.
Thank you.
What was the last thing you fixed?
The last thing I fixed? Well, I think you could argue that every day you're fixing something at the magazine, right? So, like I said, we're working on this shoot, and we're trying to get the images right, and then I'll go upstairs and read the story. So I guess that could constitute fixing. In my personal life, I have a lot of, I'm a very big vintage guy. So I have a vintage Jeep, I have a vintage boat, I have an old house. So, constant fixing.
And are you practical? Are you a practical fixer? Can you do it yourself?
I used to be more of the do-it-yourselfer. I'm more of the, I'll tell you exactly what needs to be done type now. And I don't have a lot of time. So, those things take time. So I wish I had time.
What looks delicious but tastes horrible?
I'm a big vegetarian, but I really don't love a couple things. So I guess this sounds weird, but zucchini's not one of my favorites.
Doesn't actually have a taste.
Yeah, that's the problem, I think. So you're tasting terrible. I mean, a lot of meat tastes terrible to me. I think I ate liver once as a child. That might have been one of the worst things I've ever had. And followed by
probably some duck that my mother served. Yeah, not a big game or meat person.
Would you rather be too hot or too cold?
Well, I grew up being too cold, and I skied in, 40 below weather. I think I'm more used to that. However, I will say that lately I've spent a lot more time in the heat. I really, really love heat, but I don't love humidity and heat, which is often the combination. So I get a little unnerved if it's too hot and humid. So probably I survive in the cold better.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how cool are you?
Oh my God. I'm like a 5.
That's good. That's really good.
I'm in the middle.
And that is it. It's been an absolute pleasure, Michael. I've got a massive smile. I don't know, because I didn't answer all your questions in terms of conversation, but I have just smiled. My cheeks hurt from smiling all the way through that interview. If you wanted our listeners to know more about footwear news, where would we send them?
I mean, it's very easy. They go to footwearnews.com. Join the millions of users, and there's tons of content there, and actually most of our print content ends up there as well. So we welcome you and join our social channels, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, etc.
So for me, you are a style icon. You are the nurturer, the nourisher of the footwear business. And it's been an absolute pleasure to walk in your shoes. For more interest in the Cordwainers livery, please visit our website, cordwainers.org, or our Instagram, worshipfulcordwainers. Thank you so much for your time. I hope New York treats you very well today. Thanks, Michael.
Thank you so much. This was a lot of fun.